This is Audible.
Macmillan Australia Audio and Belinda Audio present this unabridged recording of The Survivors, written by Jane Harper and read by Steve Shanahan. Prologue. She could, almost, have been one of the survivors. Standing there, outlined by the weak light, her back turned and the salt water lapping at her feet. Then she moved. Just a small shift in weight and the in out of breath, but enough to break the illusion before it was fully formed. She was still looking away, focused on something he couldn't make out in the dark. Somewhere, a wave broke and the sea surged, fresh and cold against his own legs, as it fizzed white around her bare calves. He watched as she reached down with her free hand and gathered her skirt hem above her knees. The air was filled with a fine haze, and her t-shirt clung to her back and her waist. The sea swelled again, and this time the drag of the undertow was strong enough that he took a step towards her. She didn't notice. Her face was tilted down, the silver chain of her necklace glinting against her collarbone as she leaned forward to examine something in the water. She dropped her skirt hem as the tide rushed out again and lifted a hand to sweep aside her ponytail that had fallen over one shoulder. It was heavy from the sea spray. A single strand of hair had caught in the corner of her mouth, and she brushed it free, her fingertips running across her lips. A tightness spread across his chest and shoulders. If you're going to do it. The thought whispered beneath the rush of a wave. The undertow pulled again. He fought it, briefly, then took another step. She heard him now, or sensed him at least, some disruption in the natural rhythm flowing around her. If you're going to do it. She looked up. He sucked in a breath of salt-soaked air. Do it now. Chapter 1. Kieran hoped the numbness would set in soon. The ocean's icy burn usually mellowed into something more neutral, but as the minutes ticked by, he still felt cold. He braced himself as a fresh wave broke against his skin. The water wasn't even too bad, he told himself. Not at the tail end of summer with the afternoon sun doing its best to take the edge off. Definitely goosebumps rather than hypothermia. Kieran knew he had personally described water far colder than this as nice. Only ever here in Tasmania, though, where sea temperatures surrounding the small island state were relative. Sydney, the voice in Kieran's head sounded suspiciously like his brother's, has made you soft. Maybe. But the real problem was that instead of slicing out through the blue with breath expanding in his chest and the water roaring past his ears and nothing but hundreds of kilometres of rolling sea separating him from the next nearest landmass, he was standing perfectly still, waist deep, 3 metres from the beach. His daughter lay milk drunk against his bare chest, cocooned in a dry towel, a tiny sun hat shielding her eyes as she dozed. At 3 months old, Audrey was growing heavy now. He shifted her weight, and ignoring the mild ache in his shoulders and the cold against his legs, looked out at the horizon and let her sleep on. Audrey was not the only one out for the count. On the beach, Kieran could see his girlfriend lying flat on her back, fully clothed, one arm flung over her eyes and her mouth slack. Mia's head was resting on a rolled-up towel with her hair splayed out in a long, dark fan against the sand. She could sleep anywhere these days, as could he. There was almost no one else around. A teenage couple he hadn't recognized had wandered by earlier, hand in hand and barefoot. And further along the sand, a young woman had been beachcombing at the shoreline since they'd arrived. At the height of summer, holidaymakers outnumbered Evelyn Bay's 900-strong population by 2 to 1. But now they had mostly gone, their real lives calling them back to the mainland and beyond. Hey! A familiar voice made Kieran turn. The man was emerging from one of the small side paths that connected a row of weathered beach houses to the sand. He was grinning as he hoisted a battered backpack higher on his shoulder. At his feet loped a large dog of undetermined breed, whose size and shaggy gold-brown hair made him look disconcertingly similar to his owner. Kieran waded out of the water and met Ash McDonald on the sand, turning so Ash could see the baby on his chest. Bloody hell. Ash used a calloused finger to pull back a corner of the towel and leaned his unshaven face in to look at Audrey. Well, she's too pretty to be yours, mate, but congratulations all the same. He straightened and winked at Mia, who had roused herself now, brushing the sand from her skirt as she walked over to join them. Just kidding. She's beautiful.
Thanks, Ash.
Mia smothered a yawn as he kissed her cheek and reached down to pat his dog.
Hello, Shifty.
Ash nodded at Kieran's wet shorts. How's the water? Nice enough. Reliving the good old days, eh? Kieran smiled. Rather be swimming. Kieran couldn't count how many hours he and Ash had spent as teenagers standing up to their waists in the ocean for recovery the day after a footy game, waiting for the frigid water to work its alleged magic. A lot. Ash had been a summer face floating around Evelyn Bay on and off for years, but at 15 he'd become a full-time fixture when his parents' divorce propelled his mother back to her hometown. Kieran hadn't known too much about him, other than he was from a mining town in the west of the state so hardened that their local footy team played on gravel, not grass. Given that, Kieran probably shouldn't have been as surprised as he was when the new guy rocked up at training, and for the first time in his life, Kieran wasn't automatically winning the speed drills. His goal accuracy ranking was at risk, and on-field manoeuvres that had gone unchallenged for years were now aggressively contested. He had wasted a few weeks feeling pissed off, then had hit the gym and the oval even harder, only to feel pissed off again when he'd run into Ash doing exactly the same. It had been midway through the season when Kieran had arrived late to the beach and waded out, only to find himself accidentally standing next to Ash. Not willing to be the one to move, Kieran had crossed his arms and stared hard at the sea. They'd stood side by side in silence for the whole session. Somewhere invisible to the north lay mainland Australia, to the far south, Antarctica. In front of them, nothing, all the way to the horizon. Set more personal bests this month than I did the whole of last year at my old club. Ash's voice had caught Kieran by surprise. He had glanced over at the other boy, who was sometimes a shade stronger or a second faster or a beat quicker to react, and sometimes wasn't. Ash didn't take his eyes off the water as he spoke again. Been good, actually. And bloody hell. Kieran had realised with a mix of annoyance and dawning appreciation, the bloke was right. It had been good. Kieran had never been better than when he was racing around after this dickhead. The coach had called time, and Kieran had watched as Ash started to wade back to the beach. He had opened his mouth. Hey, wait a sec. Ash had. And from then on, that was pretty much it. Neither played footy too often anymore, but nearly a decade and a half down the line, Kieran was at least as fit as he had been then, and his job as a sports physiotherapist meant it was now his turn to encourage people to stand in freezing salt water. Ash seemed about the same too, Kieran thought. His landscaping business had given him the look of gnarled good health that came from throwing around bags of soil and wrestling down trees. When'd you get back? Ash set his backpack down on the sand and Kieran heard the dull metal clang of gardening tools inside. A couple of hours ago. Kieran and Mia had stayed only as long as it was polite in his parents' house, before making an excuse to get out for some fresh air. He could still see their back veranda from where he stood, only a white wooden fence separating their property from the beach. Kieran thought about having to head back inside and felt faintly claustrophobic. "How's your dad doing?" Ash said. "Haven't run into him for a couple of weeks." "Not great." Kieran wondered if he would have to explain, but no, of course Ash was already nodding. In a place like Evelyn Bay, people knew each other's business. Probably better than Kieran did himself. He hadn't seen his dad in person for more than 18 months, when Brian had last been well enough to fly up to Sydney. Even then, Brian had been persistently confused, and Kieran's mum Verity had spent most of the visit patiently explaining things to him. When Audrey had been born 3 months ago, Verity had come alone to meet her first grandchild. Despite this flashing red warning, Kieran had still been shocked silent when they'd arrived earlier that day to be greeted by the void that had once been Brian Elliott. Kieran was genuinely unsure if his dad had deteriorated rapidly or if he himself had been in complete denial. Either way, at just 66, the dementia had a throttle hold now. Even the doctors reckoned Brian had been dealt an unlucky hand. "When's the move?" Ash glanced at Kieran's parents' place. "Few weeks." The nursing home in Hobart was ready and waiting. "We thought Mum could probably do with a hand to clear stuff out." "And what's she going to do? Not going in as well, is she?"
"No."
Kieran pictured Verity, who at 64 could easily pass for 10 years younger and still ran or biked most days. "She's found a one-bedroom place near the nursing home."
"Right, that'll be..."
Ash ran his tongue over his teeth as he searched for a word.
"Convenient."
"Yeah." Kieran really hoped so, because he strongly suspected Verity was going to absolutely hate it. Ash thought for a moment.
"Listen, tell Verity to let me know before the house hits the market. I'll tidy up the garden for her, for free, obviously."
"Really?
Oh, thanks, mate."
"No worries. It's a shit situation." It was shit. Kieran had known that. He should have come home earlier. "How long since you were last back?" Ash said, reading his mind.
2 years?
"Longer than that, I reckon," Ash said, even as Mia was shaking her head. "It's been nearly 3, she said, turning to Ash. "How's Olivia? I emailed her to say we'd be here for the week."
"Yeah, she's good. She definitely wants to catch up."
Ash was reaching for his phone. "Let me check if she's around now, actually. That's her place just up there, Fisherman's Cottage." He nodded along the row of beach houses backing onto the sand.
"Oh, yeah?"
Kieran could picture the low-slung weatherboard bungalow a dozen doors up from his parents' place. Cottage was a generously poetic name. Like pretty much every other house in the town, even a lot of the newer ones, it screamed 1960s architecture. "How long's she been renting there?"
18 months or so, since she moved back anyway.
As Ash dialed his girlfriend, Kieran tried to picture what Olivia Birch would look like at 30. He hadn't seen her properly in, he tried to work it out, years anyway, so the image in his head was firmly set at 18. She'd had a kind of lithe height and poise that adults described as statuesque and boys described as hot. She had been a regular down at the shore. Her brown curly hair tied high in a ponytail, which she pushed aside impatiently as she zipped up her wetsuit. She would still be tall, obviously, and probably still beautiful. Girls born with Olivia's looks tended to keep them. Ash held the phone to his ear, then hung up, frowning a little at the screen. He lifted his head and, to Kieran's surprise, shouted out along the beach,
"Hey, Bronte!"
The young woman had stopped beachcombing and was now crouching at the edge of the surf, focusing a camera on something in the sand. She looked up at Ash's call, then stood, her skirt flapping in the sea breeze. Liv's housemate, Ash said to Kieran and Mia before pointing towards the cottage and raising his voice again.
Liv here at home?
The girl, Bronte, Kieran gathered, shook her head, an exaggerated gesture over the distance.
No.
They saw rather than heard the word, her voice snatched away by the wind. Ash cupped a hand around his mouth.
Where is she?
A shrug. Don't know.
Right, well.
Ash turned back to his phone, the frown deepening.
I don't know, but look, she's working tonight, so let's all go for drinks. She can say hello there.
Liv's still working at the Surf and Turf? Mia tried and failed to hide her surprise.
Yeah, Ash said. For now, anyway. So, what time tonight? Eightish?
I'm not sure, mate. Kieran pointed at Audrey in the towel, awake now underneath her sun hat. We got the bub, so...
So that's what grandmothers are for, isn't it?
Ash was already texting.
I'll let Liv know we'll be in. Get Sean along as well.
Kieran and Mia exchanged a look through which they conducted an entire silent conversation, culminating in a barely visible nod from each. They would both go.
Okay.
Texting complete, Ash picked up his backpack and slung it over his shoulder. I better get back to work. I'll see you later. He leaned in to Audrey. But not you, little one. You get to spend some quality time with Grandma. Audrey turned her head to look at him, and the wind caught the edge of her hat, ripping it off. Both Kieran and Ash lunged for it, but it was halfway down the beach before they'd moved. Ash cupped his mouth again.
Bronte!
The girl was now knee-deep in the water, examining a length of seaweed she held in both hands. Her canvas bag lay safely up on the sand. She raised her head at his call, the movement both impatient and indulgent.
What now?
She saw Audrey's little hat skimming along the edge of the surf and dropped the seaweed. She ran after the hat, gathering her skirt above her knees with one hand as she splashed through the water, the white crests of the waves fizzing around her legs. She nearly had it when the breeze spirited it up and away, out to sea and out of reach. Kieran watched as Bronte stopped, recognizing a lost cause when she saw one. She dropped her skirt, the hem falling just clear of the water, and ran a hand distractedly over the back of her neck, lifting her sheet of blonde hair away from her skin in a thick, messy handful. She watched the hat float away.
What are you waiting for?
Ash was grinning.
Swim out!
She laughed and called back something that sounded like,
You swim out! Don't be so bloody selfish, Bronte, you're already half in!
She let her hair fall loose again, and with her free hand flashed him the finger. Ash laughed and turned away as his phone buzzed once in his hand. He glanced down, but didn't say anything. Kieran looked out at the hat, which was doing an unnerving impression of a person as it bobbed in the surf.
Oh, well, Mia reached out and took Audrey. I think it's gone, sweetheart. Sorry.
Audrey, unconcerned, simply lifted a chubby hand and grabbed at her mother's necklace. She yanked the silver chain in her fist as they all stood on the beach and watched as the hat dipped once, then twice, before being swallowed by the sea. Chapter 2. The Surf and Turf looked exactly the same as it had 3 years ago, 10 years ago even. One whole side of the weatherboard building was still adorned by an outline of a giant crayfish, fashioned entirely from sun-bleached shells glued to the wall. A painted sign at the entrance read, In here for fish from there. With an uneven arrow pointing to the ocean that lay a stone's throw from the outdoor dining deck. Kieran and Mia, zipped into jackets that barely had cause to leave the wardrobe back home in Sydney, crossed Beach Road without bothering to look either way. Evelyn Bay's main drag had the ghost town feel that Kieran had always associated with the end of summer. Parking spaces so coveted in mid-season that they sparked incidents of road rage now lay empty and unloved. Every shop, including the small supermarket, had shut for the evening, and blank windows indicated more than one business had closed its doors for good for the off-season. It hadn't always been like that, apparently. Evelyn Bay lay sandwiched between native woodlands and the sea, and its fortunes had been driven by fishing and forestry back when Kieran's parents had been his age. Now the next generation drove dolphin-watching boats during the summer and scrabbled for labouring and casual work in the winter, or they left town altogether. The surf and turf was busy, which at that hour of the night and that time of the year meant a handful of people scattered across half a dozen tables. No one paid Kieran any real attention as they entered. He hadn't expected them to. 12 years was a long time in anyone's book, and the few people who'd felt the burning need to have a crack had mostly done so. But he still felt a bit relieved. A couple of young guys Kieran didn't recognise were drinking on the outside deck, pretending not to be cold in their T-shirts in the twilight. And he was glad to see Ash had already commandeered an inside table near the back. Ash had a beer in one hand and his phone in the other, and put both down on the chipped surface as he saw them heading over. Verity stepped up with the babysitting duty, eh? Good on her. Kieran nodded. His mum had, without complaint. She'd simply cleared a collection of half-filled moving boxes before settling down on the couch with her husband and grandchild for a long evening of low-verbal, high-dependency companionship. Kieran and Mia had exchanged guilty looks and hovered in the hallway, taking their time putting on their shoes and finding their phones, until Verity got up off the couch and opened the front door for them herself, rolling her eyes as they at last stepped out into the evening air. Ash's phone buzzed on the table and he checked the screen. Sean's on his way. Had to fix something on the boat. Anything serious? Probably not. I think he's just flat out. Ash took a sip of beer. Even Liv was saying. What was I saying? A waitress appeared at the table, pad and pen in hand, and sporting the surf and turf's distinctive uniform of orange T-shirt and skirt. She didn't listen to Ash's answer, instead moving around the table. Oh, my God, Mia, hello! Olivia Birch held her arms out to Mia, who was already rising to greet her. The two women hugged, then leaned back to examine each other properly. Kieran's guess had been right. Even more than a decade out of high school, in garish orange and with her thick curly bun already collapsing mid-shift, Olivia was still, by any objective measure, the most striking woman in the room. Hi, Kieran, she said over her girlfriend's shoulder. G'day, Liv. She looked like she might say something else, but then simply let go of Mia and opened her notebook. So, drinks? Liv, thanks so much for the little outfit you sent for Audrey, Mia said when Olivia returned with the tray. I've got a photo. She pulled out her phone and Olivia put down the drinks and peered over. God, she is so cute. Where is she anyway, with Verity? Yeah, Mia said. We're here all this week, though. I'll bring her in. Do, or stop by my place any time. I'm only a few doors up from you. Yeah, Ash said. We kind of met your housemate earlier, actually. Bronte. Olivia glanced across the room. And for the first time, Kieran noticed the girl from the beach, now also wearing the orange T-shirt and skirt. She was younger than he'd initially thought, only 21 or 22 maybe. She was short, with a neat round face and wide eyes that made her look uncannily doll-like. Her hair was tied back now, and Kieran could see that the colour that had looked simply dark blonde on the beach was in fact created by the kind of intricate highlights that were common on the streets of Sydney, but in this context looked exotically groomed. Bronte was carrying a glass of red wine to a corner table, where a man sat alone glaring at a laptop screen. She made an inaudible remark as she placed the drink on a cardboard coaster, and the man smiled despite himself. He sat back, stretching his shoulders, and took a decent swallow of wine. He mimed tipping the rest of the glass over the keyboard in mock frustration, and they both laughed. She turned away, and the man put his glass down carefully, watching Bronte over his laptop screen as she threaded her way through the tables. "She's not local, is she?" Kieran asked. "No," Olivia shook her head. "Summer." Ears possibly burning, Bronte's gaze fell on Olivia before clocking Kieran and Mia. She smiled in recognition, then held up a finger in a "wait a moment" gesture. She disappeared through the swinging door labelled "staff only" and re-emerged a few seconds later holding a battered cardboard box with "lost property" scrawled on the side. "Not the same, I know," Bronte said as she made her way over, "but it might save you having to buy another one." She passed the box to Mia. Inside, Kieran could see dozens of sun hats of different sizes and colours, some virtually new. "We were getting about 5 a day left behind at one point, so if there's anything in there for your baby, you may as well take it." Bronte picked up a small yellow floral hat, still with the sales tag attached. "No one's coming back for them now." "Thanks very much," Mia said, sifting through the box as she introduced them both. "That's so thoughtful."
"Guilty conscience," Ash grinned as he took a slug of beer. "Hey, Bronte, least you could bloody do after letting us all down before."
"Get lost, that water was freezing."
Bronte's laugh trailed off a little under Olivia's cool gaze, and she launched into the story. How she was minding her own business on the beach and Kieran and Mia were there, and then Ash arrived, flapping the floral-patterned hat about as she spoke. The incident sounded faintly odd in the retelling.
"Ah,"
was all Olivia said when Bronte ran out of steam. Bronte barely drew breath before turning to Kieran.
"So Verity's your mum, is she? She's so nice. She was clearing out her shed a few weeks ago and she gave me some wire for these little sculptures I've been messing around with. I ended up giving her a hand and she let me take a few useful bits and pieces."
"Are you an artist?" Kieran said.
"Yes, well..."
Bronte paused as Olivia, who was leaning against Ash's chair, shifted.
"Art student. I'm at uni in Canberra."
"Cool. What kind of art?"
"All kinds. I haven't decided what to focus on yet. But I want to do a big coastal series this term, so I thought this seemed a good place to, you know..."
She made a sweeping gesture.
"Get inspired."
Even Kieran caught a flicker in Olivia's neutral expression that time. Bronte blinked, suddenly self-conscious. She was saved by a call from the kitchen hatch, and not bothering to hide her relief, hurried away. Olivia glanced sharply at Ash, responding to something Kieran hadn't caught.
"What?"
she said.
Ash looked up.
"Nothing.
I didn't say a thing to her."
"I didn't say you did, Liv."
When Olivia didn't respond, Ash reached out and pulled her closer.
"Come on, does she really matter?"
Ash grinned at her until finally she smiled back.
"Don't let yourself get wound up."
"No, I know."
Olivia shrugged, a little embarrassed now. She turned to Kieran and Mia. "But she is only a student. Same as me. Or if she doesn't like that, she can say she's a waitress, same as me. But she's no more an artist than I am an urban planner, which I'm not anymore, obviously. I just think it's disingenuous to go around saying something that's not the case." Mia nodded sympathetically. She put a couple of baby hats on the table and pushed the box aside.
"There's nothing at all around here that's more in your field, Liv?"
"Not really. I mean, at the firm in Melbourne, my specialism was zoning issues for buildings over 20 stories, for which the demand around here is clearly zero."
She was right about that, Kieran thought. The tallest building in Evelyn Bay was the former captain's quarters in the old colonial part of town. The heritage-listed sandstone building, now a bed and breakfast, had an upstairs.
"But I knew it would be like this," Olivia was saying.
"When I realised I was going to have to move back, I applied to do a master's online, so at least that's something. Try to keep my hand in the industry, for whatever it's worth." She didn't sound optimistic. "How is your mum these days?" Mia asked. Olivia shrugged. "She's fine. She's okay. Happy I'm back. She'd prefer me to be living at home with her, but there's no way. I'd go crazy in 5 minutes. Although..." They could see Bronte now wiping down the outside tables, her hair blowing across her face in the wind. Olivia smiled, attempting to lighten the mood. "Frying pan, fire." Mia laughed. "Is she really that bad?" "No, to be fair, she's not. She's just..." Olivia watched as the two young guys shivering in their T-shirts attempted small talk. Bronte smiled and shrugged and continued wiping. "Young. I mean, she literally didn't even know that you have to book hard waste collections. She was dumping all this art stuff next to the wheelie bins and honestly expecting it to disappear. It's as if..." She stopped as Ash rested his hand on her waist. "She'll be gone soon," he said. "How long to go? 3 weeks?" 2 weeks, 5 days. "There you go. Keep your eye on the prize." He grinned. "You'll be back to walking around the house naked before you know it. You'll love it." "I'll love not having to chase up her share of whatever bill she owes me." "Oh." Olivia looked across the dining area. "Hang on, I better see to that." The T-shirt boys, their arms only the faintest shade of blue, had admitted defeat and come inside to pay. Kieran watched with interest as Ash's eyes followed Olivia all the way to the cash register. He had never known Ash and Olivia as a couple. They weren't quite how he would have imagined, but then he'd never really imagined them together. Ash almost certainly had, though. Kieran would be surprised if the idea of being with Liv Birch hadn't crossed the minds of most blokes in town at one time or another. As he reached for his drink, Kieran felt it before he saw it. The prickling sensation of being under scrutiny. He didn't move his head, instead sliding his gaze slowly around the room. It took him a second to locate the source, but when he did, it was with a sinking feeling. The boy, man really these days, was standing behind the kitchen hatch. He was broad-shouldered and wearing a grease-stained apron and an expression that made Kieran wish he were anywhere else. From the guy's size and stance, he could have been in his mid-20s, but Kieran knew for a fact he was 19. He was wearing a name tag too small to read, but Kieran didn't need it anyway. Liam Gilroy. Kieran took a breath, then another, and forced himself to make eye contact. Liam immediately pretended to be looking past him, then turned back to his grill. Kieran waited for a feeling of relief, but none came. There would be no real trouble, he knew. There never was. But the room suddenly felt stifling. Kieran checked if Mia had noticed the exchange, but she was absorbed in picking a loose thread off one of the hats without unravelling the whole row of stitches. He stood, a little too quickly, and his chair squealed against the floor. "Back in a minute." Ash and Mia immediately looked up, both flashing an identical, "Don't leave me," plea with their eyes. They got along fine in wider company, but struggled with small talk one-on-one, Kieran knew. Still, that couldn't be helped. He left them to their slightly strained smiles and made a beeline for the toilets. There was no one else there, and he stood in the quiet. The mirrors above the sinks were streaked, and in the harsh bathroom lights his reflection looked a little older than his 30 years. He was always tired these days. The lack of sleep since Audrey had arrived had been brutal. He washed his hands slowly, debating whether he and Mia could decently leave before Sean arrived. Probably. He and Sean went back far enough that he could get away with it. But at the same time, went against the grain a little. Mia didn't really get it.
"Male friendships are so weird. You guys barely keep in touch,"
she'd said to him as they were packing to come here.
"Yeah, we do. I see them every time I visit. In between, though, I mean, you never even speak."
That was true. Kieran had heard about Ash and Olivia getting together through Mia, who had heard it from Olivia in one of their thrice-yearly catch-up emails.
"I suppose," he'd said. "Works out, though."
And it did. Kieran was never worried about that. Partly because when the three of them did see each other, they really were able to pick up where they'd left off. But mostly because if they had been going to fall apart, it would have happened 12 years ago. Kieran turned off the tap and looked away from his reflection. If they'd managed to survive that, those really dark days of blame and reckoning, they could certainly survive a couple of years of sporadic text messages. Kieran dried his hands, checked his phone, and unable to string things out any longer, finally pulled the door open. He'd barely stepped out into the tight vestibule separating the toilets from the dining area when he heard the familiar voice floating from the kitchen. The words were muffled by the whine of the industrial fan, but were clear enough to make him stop short. Kieran stood very still, knowing with an instinct that he'd fine-tuned over the years that the conversation was about him.
"If it was up to me, he wouldn't even be allowed in here."
Liam sounded very pissed off. A girl's polite laugh. "Well, last I checked, nothing around here was up to us." It was Bronte speaking. Kieran recognised the voice now.
"Anyway, he seems all right."
"And how would you know that?"
Bronte seemed taken aback.
"I don't really."
"You don't know anything about him?"
"No, I suppose not. I just..."
"What?"
"I don't get why you're giving him a hard time, that's all."
"No?"
Kieran realised he was holding his breath. He let it out. There would be no surprises in what was coming next.
"Well, whatever."
Liam's voice was hard.
"But the way I see it, you kill someone, you deserve all the shit that's coming your way."
Chapter 3. It was lucky, or perhaps unlucky, that Sean was sitting at the table when Kieran re-emerged into the bright lights of the dining area, because otherwise he would have grabbed Mia's hand, said a swift farewell to Ash, and left. He was still strongly considering this course of action when Sean stood to greet him, a broad, lazy smile spreading across his face.
"Sorry I'm late. You know what it gets like with the season change."
Sean pulled his chair around next to Kieran's, and after a moment, Kieran sat down too.
"I'm glad you're still here. I thought new parents would be crashed out by this time of night."
"Yeah."
Kieran could feel Mia watching him closely and cleared his throat, tried to remember what his normal voice sounded like.
"Well, usually we are, but..."
"Let me guess. But Ash bullied you into coming out anyway."
Sean gave a knowing nod and held up a palm.
"Say no more."
Kieran's smile was genuine this time.
"But we wanted to say hello, mate."
He meant it. Kieran couldn't remember a time when he and Sean hadn't been friends. Sean had always been there. There were photos of them as infants at each other's first birthday parties. And Kieran's earliest memory was of the two of them on the beach, their parents chatting while the boys dug holes in the sand and kicked water at each other. Sean had grown from a quiet, skinny, hippie kid into a thoughtful, rangy, eco-conscious man who was at his happiest out on the water, watching the horizon rock gently from the deck of a boat. His hair was still short enough to dry with a single swipe of his hand, and he always gave the vague impression that he'd emerged moments earlier fresh from the sea and thrown on whatever clothes were to hand. He wasn't quite the same person he'd been in the time Kieran now simply thought of as before, but none of them were. Mia, Ash, Olivia, Olivia's mother, Kieran's own parents. Liam, Kieran himself, obviously. No one had come through the storm unscathed. Kieran glanced now at the kitchen hatch. At least he couldn't see Liam anymore. He sat back in his chair and tried to relax.
Aye, no one's been bullied into anything, Ash was saying. I'm insulted by that on Kieran's behalf. He and Mia are here of their own free will.
As Ash spoke, he made eye contact with Bronte near the bar and circled his hand in a more drinks motion at the table. She gave him a thumbs up and he winked. Her gaze snagged on Kieran and he tried to gauge her reaction to a conversation with Liam in the kitchen. Curiosity? Contempt? She looked away before he could tell.
Look, I'm not claiming any different.
Sean was still smiling as he pointed at Ash. But it's funny how often people's free will turns out to coincide with exactly what you want, mate. He grinned at Kieran, who had to force himself to focus. Happens all the time at home. Kieran couldn't think of anything to say and was relieved when Mia jumped in. Where are you two living now? She said. Still out by the marina? Ash nodded. Yeah, same place. Got a few things that need fixing, but suits us both for work. Kieran pictured the sprawling beach house Ash and Sean had shared for at least the past 6 years. It had always been a little ramshackle, but there was no criticizing the location, and it was an upgrade from the smaller and even more ramshackle place they'd shared before that. Mia turned to Sean. How's the business going anyway? We saw you out there earlier. Or the boat, at least. After Ash had left them at the beach that afternoon, Kieran and Mia had looked at each other, then at his parents' house, where they knew a mountain of moving boxes awaited.
I guess we could go back, Mia had said.
Kieran had glanced down at his baby daughter. Or we could show Audrey the sights of Evelyn Bay. First time she's been here. Where were you thinking? The lookout? Mia had shrugged. It's up to you. You're the one who's going to have to carry her up that cliff path. No worries. Kieran had slipped on his T-shirt and shaken the sand off the baby sling before clipping it around him. Too easy. In fact, the well-worn trail winding up and away from the town had been harder going than he remembered with the extra weight against his chest. Part way up, they had passed the gates leading to the rear of the town cemetery, before the path narrowed and grew steeper. Kieran had been glad to reach the top. 12 years ago, the former whaling lookout had been little more than a flat clearing with a single faded sign that implied, as Kieran remembered it, that it might not be the greatest idea to go clamouring about on the cliffs, but, hey, live and let live. Now the lookout was a small but formal decked area, enclosed by a wire fence topped by a thick wooden railing at waist height. Next to smart laminated boards offering illustrated information about whale migratory patterns and the nesting area of crested terns, a very legible notice warned that trespassers on the cliffs risked a $500 fine, enforceable under Local Bylaw Section D, Amendment 16(1). There had been no one else up there, and Kieran had sat next to Mia on a bench that had also appeared in recent years and looked out at the sea as the wind snatched at their hair. The water, which could be a thousand different sparkling colours, was that afternoon an undulating plain of dull grey-green. Some way out beyond the rocks, an anchored catamaran listed gently. Sean's boat, the Nautilus Blue. Is he under? Mia was squinting at the deck. Looks like it. Kieran could see the hoisted flag flapping its message, blue and white. Diver down. Kieran had scanned the water for the dark slick of a wetsuit, a head bobbing amid the waves, but the surface remained unbroken. He wasn't really expecting to see him, The wreckage of the doomed SS Mary Minerva lay 35 metres deep. Sean could be gone for a while. The memorial, commissioned in tribute to the 54 passengers and crew who had lost their lives nearly a century ago, now stood on a rocky outcrop, facing out towards the site of the sinking. The memorial was said to be visible from both land and water in all weather. It wasn't, though. Kieran couldn't help but think with a sting of bitterness every time he saw it now. Not all weather. Still, people seemed to like it, and it was more recognition than most shipwrecks ever got. The Tasmanian waters were notorious for having claimed more than 1,000 vessels, their rusting skeletal remains decaying slowly, turning the island's waters into an underwater graveyard.
"Business is good, thanks,"
Sean was saying now, raising his voice above the noise in the surf and turf. "Had a busy summer, which helps. Glad it's over now, though. Time for the fun stuff," Kieran said. "Yeah," Sean smiled. "First bookings in a couple of weeks. Got a group flying out from Norway." "You ready for 'em?"
"Getting there."
This had always been a demanding time of year in the business, Kieran remembered, and nothing would have changed. Sean would have spent all summer taking tourists fishing and snorkeling and on easy shallow water dives, making the money while it was still there to be made. When autumn came and the algae that clouded the summer sea cleared, the serious cold water divers would start flying in from around the world to take advantage of the few short months of peak underwater visibility, and Sean could do what he loved best, go deep. The Mary Minerva was one of the few accessible shipwrecks in the state, but it was only for divers who knew what they were doing. And divers who knew what they were doing didn't want to waste the experience in suboptimal conditions, so the window of opportunity was limited. By July, winter sea conditions would become so treacherous that it would be impossible to reach the wreck, and the Mary Minerva would be left in its submerged solitude for another year. "I was planning to be a bit further on with the safety checks by now," Sean was saying. "The Norwegians want to get into the engine room, but I don't know about it this year. I don't like the feel of that north-facing wall. I really need to get right in and have a look, but I think my good torch has gone overboard somewhere. I lent it to the girls." Ash didn't look up from his phone. "My yellow torch, the waterproof one?"
"Yeah. Sorry, thought I said."
Sean blinked. "I've been looking for that for weeks, mate. I was literally about to buy another one." Ash saw Sean's face and laughed.
"Come on, don't be like that. I thought I'd said. Anyway, they needed it. They only had a small, crappy one."
"It's expensive." Sean still seemed a bit annoyed. "And you're not supposed to use it for too long on land. The bulb can overheat."
"Hey, Liv,"
he said as Olivia brought over the tray with their drinks. "Are you girls finished with my torch, the yellow one?"
"Oh, yeah, I think so."
She unloaded the tray and tucked it under her arm. "Wasn't me who wanted it anyway. It was Bronte." Sean frowned.
"What for?"
Olivia hesitated. Bronte was stacking glasses at the bar, out of earshot. She thought she heard something out the back of the house a couple of nights.
"Really?"
Mia raised her eyebrows. "What, the bit leading onto the beach?"
"Yeah,"
Olivia said. "I mean, if your housemate says something like that, you obviously take it seriously, but..." She leaned against the table, absently running a thumb along the chain of her necklace.
"Look, I'm not saying she didn't think she heard something, but I've been there for 2 years and never had any problems, even in the summer when you've got people out on the sand at all hours."
Olivia looked at Ash. "I mean, you've never heard anything either, have you, when you've stayed?" Ash shook his head. "I had a look around just in case with the tourists, you know, but nothing to see. I mean, the shed's always unlocked, but nothing in there was gone. It was probably a dog or something."
Mia frowned. "Still, it's a bit creepy."
"I know," Olivia said. "It was pretty unsettling for a while, but the window in Bronte's room faces the sea, and you know what it can sound like with the wind and water, especially if you didn't grow up with it." They all nodded at that. Anyway, Olivia shrugged and turned to Sean. She hasn't mentioned it for a couple of weeks, so I think... She broke off and turned as Bronte walked past. Bronte, you're finished with that yellow torch, aren't you?
Oh.
Bronte stopped, a little awkward as she realized all eyes were on her. Yeah, I am. You sure? Sean said. Because if you're having trouble with noise from the beach or whatever, I've got a different one you can... No, that's okay. Thanks, though. It's fine. Did you work out what the noise was? Olivia asked in surprise. Bronte's gaze flicked to Kieran and their eyes met, long enough for him to clock her expression. Uncomfortable, definitely. Maybe a hint of pity? That wasn't unheard of either. From the kitchen hatch came the sound of a pan being dropped, and Bronte blinked. She looked back to Olivia. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was nothing to worry about. I'd just freak myself out. She turned and headed back to the kitchen. Kieran could see Liam leaning out from the serving hatch. He murmured something as she approached and they both glanced back at Kieran.
The way I see it, you kill someone, you deserve all the shit that's coming your way.
Kieran remembered Liam's words, unmistakable as they floated out from the kitchen. There had been a silence, the industrial fan droning angrily. Kieran had tried to walk away. Go back to the table, he had told himself. Go back to Mia and Ash. You don't need to hear this. He had stayed anyway, just out of sight.
Sorry, the guy with the baby, Bronte had said at last. That guy? He killed someone?
At least she sounded doubtful, Kieran had thought. Wrongly so, but still.
Yeah. Liam was annoyed now. Two people, actually. One of them was my dad.
Shit. Seriously?
There was a stunned pause.
Oh, my God. What happened?
No, I'm sorry. You don't have to... It's fine. I mean, it's not fine, obviously, but it was like 12 years ago now.
I'm so sorry, Liam.
Bronte sounded like she meant it.
I was just surprised. He seems so normal. Does his partner know?
Yeah, of course. She was at school here too when it happened. It was the day of the storm.
Kieran could hear the confusion in Bronte's silence.
Look, it doesn't matter, Liam went on. It was this big storm, the worst in like 80 years or something. But everyone who was here then remembers it, and they all know what he did. They could all tell you.
What about your uncle?
Sean, Liam said. What about him?
I thought Olivia said Sean was coming here to meet them all for drinks, so...
Oh, yeah. Liam gave a hard laugh. They're all friends.
But she was still confused. Were Sean and your dad brothers, or are you related by marriage, or...
Yeah, my dad was Sean's older brother.
Kieran could imagine Liam shaking his head.
But Sean has, I don't know, forgiven him or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
So everyone knows?
Bronte asked.
Most people.
But
a long pause.
I mean, why is everyone acting like nothing happened?
Same reason that Sean is still friendly with him, I guess. People feel sorry for him. Not that they should.
Liam's tone was stark.
But they do. Because the other person the dickhead managed to kill was his own brother.
Chapter 4. If Evelyn Bay had been quiet earlier, it was completely deserted as Kieran, Mia and Sean stepped out into the night air. They had stayed until closing time, with Bronte systematically clearing tables around them as other customers left one by one. At 11 p.m. on the dot, the manager had wiped his hands on his apron, flipped on the harsh overhead lights and cut the music dead. He'd come out of the kitchen, clicking his long fingers towards the supplies closet and calling something back through the serving hatch. Liam had emerged in response, scowling and clattering a mop and bucket in his wake. He kept his head down, his bulk hunched awkwardly as he splashed water on the floor. It had taken Kieran a moment to realize that Liam was deliberately channeling the dirty runoff water towards his feet as he waited by the cash register to pay. It was such a strangely impotent gesture that Kieran actually felt sorry for the bloke. He didn't even bother to take a step aside, simply letting the soapy trickle seep across the tiles and pool harmlessly around the soles of his shoes. Christ, he could let the guy have this one if he needed it that badly. Sean had observed the exchange, his grey eyes flicking from Liam to Kieran and back again, before getting to his feet. He'd strolled over to his nephew, put a palm on his back and said something in a low, calm tone. Liam had continued splashing water on the floor until Sean had reached out a hand and simply stopped the mop. Sean was shorter and slighter than his broad-backed nephew, but right then Liam had looked like a child. Sean leaned in again, using the same calm voice. Finally, his nephew nodded. Sean straightened and slapped Liam gently on the shoulder. Good man. He'd let go of the mop handle, and after a beat, Liam had carried on. Out of the corner of his eye, Kieran had seen Bronte watching, a cloth rag hanging limply in her hand. At the door, Mia stopped to hug Olivia goodbye. Do you want us to wait and walk you home? Mia said. We're going right past your place. It's okay, I'll stay at my mum's most Saturday nights now, Olivia said. We do Sunday morning yoga together. I think the weekend drags for her a bit otherwise. Anyway. Olivia brushed a stray curl off her forehead. That's all fine. Ash will hang around, drop me off at mum's. But listen, let's arrange something again, one night when I'm not working. Definitely, Mia said. Then waved a couple of baby sun hats at Bronte, who was frowning at the cash register. Bye. Thanks again for these. Oh. Bronte looked up, her concentration broken. No worries, you're welcome. Her smile faded as she dropped her eyes from Kieran and Mia to the register, the frown a little deeper now. The road outside was dim compared with the brightness inside the surf and turf. Only the occasional street lamp casting a weak orange glow as Kieran, Sean and Mia walked through the sleeping town. Kieran could hear the wash of the tide, and within minutes the sea was back in view as the shops and businesses thinned out. They passed the petrol station and the small red brick police station, and up ahead he could see the halo of the marina's security lights cutting through the night. So, did Liam give you a hard time? Sean said. Or was his revenge limited to a bucket of water? Kieran shook his head. We didn't speak. That was true. In the dark, he felt Mia take his hand. I meant to warn him you'd be there, but I got caught up out at the wreck. Sean paused. Shit. Maybe I should have warned you too. Doesn't matter. If I didn't see him there, it'd be somewhere else. The marina was close now, the vessel still and shining white under the lights. Does Liam work at the surf and turf full time now? Nah, just casual shifts for the summer. Got him helping me on the boat the rest of the time. That's good. Yeah, well, he was at a bit of a loose end after he finished school. Anyway, Sean had come to a stop outside a light brown weatherboard beach house. This is me. Every window was dark, but as Sean opened the gate, a security light tripped on to illuminate a slightly sagging veranda and an immaculately maintained front yard. A board fixed to the fence advertised the name and website of Ash's landscaping business. Listen. Sean stopped with one hand on the gate. I'm sorry about Liam. I'll have a word with him. Don't bother, mate. I heard him talking a bit to that waitress. But he didn't even speak to me. It'll be fine. Sean didn't reply, but ran a hand over his stubble in a way that implied he knew his nephew a bit better than Kieran did. He seemed like he was about to say something else, then changed his mind. He pulled out his phone. "I'll have to be down at the wreck most days this week." He opened a weather app and checked the forecast. "Actually, shout out if you want to come. Conditions are pretty perfect tomorrow. Not as good Monday and Tuesday, but I'll still be there. Either way," Sean raised a hand in farewell. "Good to see you both. Like Liv was saying, let's do it again when she's off, yeah?" Kieran and Mia watched him climb the wooden steps, unlock the door, and disappear inside, jangling his keys as he went. Kieran looked over at Mia. He was tired, but suddenly couldn't remember the last time it had been just the two of them. It would only have been 3 months ago, he knew. It felt like a lot longer. "Quick look at the beach," he said. Mia smiled. "Sure." They walked hand in hand towards the sound of the ocean, turning away from the marina and to the inky night beyond. They took their shoes off as they hit sand and headed down to the water. The horizon was a jet black line, giving way above to the bright moon and a splash of stars. "Did Liam really not say anything earlier?" Mia said. "Not to me, just to that girl, Bronte. I overheard them in the kitchen." "What did he tell her?" "What you'd expect." They fell quiet, not needing to say anything more. Kieran was glad. That had always been one of his favourite things about Mia, right from the night they had met, remet technically, in a too loud student bar in Sydney's city centre. He had been draining his beer and feeling, as he always had in those first couple of years, exhausted by everything. Tired of his studies, of friends that were no more than acquaintances, of the effort of opening his eyes every morning and shutting them every night, of life in general. The fog had grown so thick, he'd become used to navigating his days half-blind. "Yep, sounds about right," the campus doctor had said matter-of-factly when Kieran had been forced to make an appointment after repeatedly falling asleep in lectures. "Mental overload. Pretty common post-trauma. Feel like sleep's the only time you get a proper break from yourself?" He tapped his teeth and considered. "Maybe think about giving the counsellor another crack. Fresh pair of eyes might help." Kieran had left the clinic with a couple of numbers and reluctantly gone to the bar, where a few girls had tried to give him a couple more. What he'd really wanted was to go home and sleep, but it was someone's birthday, he couldn't remember whose, and the blokes on his course were already giving him shit for never coming out. He bought one drink and nursed it, pretending it was his third or fourth. He'd finally reached the point where he felt he could put his empty bottle down on the counter and leave quietly without saying goodbye, when someone had stepped out of the Friday night crowd and into his path. "Kieran?" He had blinked at the woman in front of him. "Yeah?" "Hi." She touched her collarbone. "Mia Sum." She'd had a straight, blunt fringe and glasses back then that gave her a kind of pretty geek girl vibe, and she was wearing a short black dress that he'd later learned she considered lucky. What he'd thought was iced water in her hand turned out to be a surprisingly pleasant vodka cocktail of her own invention that years later she still referred to as Mia's Mayhem. "I used to live in Evelyn Bay," Mia had added when the recognition was slow to dawn amid the chaos of the bar. I was Gabby's friend." She said the name clearly, which Kieran found interesting. Most people tended to lower their voices at the mention of poor, here, then gone Gabby Birch. Mia had seemed a little reluctant to elaborate, but she didn't need to. Kieran had placed her by then, and she was instead struggling to reconcile the shy girl he barely remembered with the woman standing in front of him. He knew he was thinking of the right person, though, because there hadn't been many, or indeed any, other half-Singaporean girls living in Evelyn Bay when Kieran was a teenager. But the mere sum he remembered had been 4 years younger than him and always seemed to be rushing past his house to or from a piano lesson. Kieran wasn't sure he'd have recalled even that much about her except, as Mia had said, she'd been best friends with Gabby. And after the storm, everyone remembered a lot more about Gabriel Birch than they'd ever seemed to before. He knew Mia's parents had upped and moved the family to Sydney as soon as they had been given the green light by police, which had seemed like a pretty good idea to Kieran, both then and now. Mia was still looking at him in the bar, a tiny frown forming. "Kieran, are you all right?" "Yes," he'd said automatically. She was jostled by someone trying to reach the bar, but held her ground. "Do you want to go somewhere else?" "Where?" "I don't know, just not here." He was sick of this place, and unexpectedly that actually sounded good. "Yeah," he said. "Okay." They had stepped out into the warm city air and walked a little way until Mia had pointed to a bench where they'd sat surrounded by litter and a patch of dead grass and the sounds of Sydney after dark. They'd avoided the one old subject they had in common and instead talked about other things. City life, Kieran's internship at the physio clinic that could probably lead to a job if he managed to make it to graduation, Mia's biology degree, and the subtly racist lab partner she was stuck with until the end of the year, until Mia had stretched and checked her phone. "It's late," she had said. "I should go." Already, Kieran had glanced at his watch and had been surprised by the time. "Yeah, besides," Mia had looked up at him from underneath her fringe, "you've probably got an early start tomorrow, haven't you?" "What do you mean?" "Nothing," she smiled. "You just look like the kind of guy who hits the gym pretty hard on a Saturday morning." "Not the gym." He'd said it before he could help himself. "I go swimming." She had blinked. "Do you really?" The flirtatious tone dissolved in an instant, and a look of sad surprise flashed across her face. She had sat back down on the bench and put a warm hand on his back. "Oh, Kieran." Kieran sat on the beach now, years later, but somehow still back in Evelyn Bay, and reached across the sand and took her hand. She'd grown out the fringe a while ago and swapped to contacts, and he wasn't sure what had happened to the black dress. She still enjoyed the occasional Mia's mayhem, but now it was usually whipped up in their tiny kitchen and served in a tumbler from the cupboard. Life had a quieter rhythm now, and he was still a little surprised how much he liked it. Nights in and not minding when the other person meant to smile but yawned instead.
"Sorry."
She covered her mouth quickly as the wind blew her hair across her face. "You ready to go back?"
"I'm so..."
She yawned again. "I know, me too." They stood, dusting off the sand. Ahead, the beach stretched out in shadow. Kieran's parents' house was only a 10-minute walk along the shoreline, but he felt Mia look into the night and hesitate. "Go back along the road?" he said, and she nodded. They stopped under a lamppost where the sandy path hit the tarmac of Beach Road and held the fence for balance as they put their shoes back on. There was no official pavement, but no traffic either, and they walked side by side along the makeshift nature strip that lined the front of the beachside cottages. Most of the homes lay in sleeping darkness, with only the occasional glow from a front window. The houses blocked the view of the water, but Kieran could hear it lapping against the shore. "Hey, what did you make of Liv and Ash as a couple?" Mia asked suddenly. Kieran considered, picturing them earlier at the surf and turf. there was something about Ash and Olivia together that he'd found a little hard to get a read on. It could just be history, he knew. A lot of water had flowed under that bridge for all of them. But that also had the faintly combative edge that some couples seemed to enjoy, but that Kieran personally found exhausting, even as a spectator.
I don't know, he said, meaning it. What did you think?
Oh, I just hope he doesn't mess her around.
He won't, Kieran was about to say, then stopped. It was Ash. He might. Did you notice the way... Mia started, then stopped, hearing the low rumble at the same time as Kieran did. He realised what it was a split second before the car tore around the corner, the rumble becoming a roar as it careered towards them, headlights on full beam.
Shit, watch out!
Kieran put his arm out for Mia, but she was already off the road, the small of her back pressed against someone's garden fence. He felt the rush of wind as the car shrieked past, shrill and bright in the still of the night. It hadn't come close to touching them, but Kieran's heart was pumping and his head tingled with a rush of blood. He could feel Mia's pulse pounding against his arm. He pictured Audrey sleeping in her cot at home and thought about what could have happened and felt faintly sick. They watched the car race down the road, the red taillights blinking smaller until it turned another corner and disappeared completely. It had come and gone in seconds, and the only sounds once more were their breathing and the gentle breaking of waves.
Oh, my God! Mia laughed with relief. What's worth rushing for around here? There's literally nothing in this town that can't wait.
I know. You okay?
Yeah, it was just a surprise.
They walked on. A few lights were glowing in Fisherman's Cottage as they passed, but Kieran's parents' house was completely dark as they crept up the driveway. He let them in, nearly tripping over the stack of moving boxes piled in the hallway. Mia went straight through to check on Audrey, who was sound asleep in her travel cot in the corner of Kieran's old bedroom. The door to his parents' room was closed, but Verity had left a note detailing how much formula Audrey had taken, which Mia glanced over while Kieran undressed. Within 10 minutes they were both in bed, the adrenaline spike from earlier having worn off, leaving behind only cloudy exhaustion. Mia was half asleep even as she was saying goodnight. Outside Kieran's window, he could hear the swell of the sea. He closed his eyes and slept, thick and heavy. He stirred only once when, somewhere deep within his dream, he heard the sound of a door slam. Chapter 5. Kieran was alone when he opened his eyes, squinting against the morning light beaming through a crack in the blind. The bedding on Mia's side had been thrown back and the sheets were cold. He raised his head and could see that Audrey's cot was empty. The skirt and top Mia had laid out last night in the chair were gone. Kieran hadn't heard her get up. He sighed and lay back, feeling both guilty and relieved. Along with the night feeds, Audrey had been starting her day before dawn for the past month, and they tried to take it in turns to get up. He was pretty sure, certain actually, that it was his go. He checked the time. After 8. No wonder he felt unusually rested. As a father, the phrase still sounded foreign to him. That counted as a luxuriously late start. Kieran got out of bed and pulled on his board shorts and a t-shirt. His phone showed a text from Mia sent earlier to say she was going out to avoid waking the whole house. He texted her back. Okay. Out in the hall, he stopped as his bare feet crunched against the floorboards. He looked down. A light layer of sand trailed across the wood. It had been walked through at least once, the scuff marks still visible. Had he and Mia brought that in last night? He could see his shoes where he'd left them inside the front door, but he knew how the sand got everywhere. A broom and dustpan were propped clumsily against a wall, seemingly abandoned mid-task. From the kitchen, Kieran could hear his parents' muffled voices. He listened, but couldn't hear Mia, or Audrey for that matter. They must still be out. Kieran reached for the broom. It wasn't a big job, and as he emptied the dustpan into the bathroom bin a minute or two later, he grabbed an old beach towel. If he was going to swim, now was as good a time as any. He didn't like to miss a day, and rarely had in 12 years, since the very first doctor at the hospital in Hobart had issued her stark warning. Kieran hadn't caught her name, but she'd come into his room, put down her clipboard, and pulled up the visitor's chair. She'd had short grey hair and the careworn face of someone who had seen it all before and could do without seeing it all again. "All right, listen close," she said. Kieran had been admitted less than 24 hours earlier and was still feeling shell-shocked. "Because this is important." Kieran, lungs still heavy and aching, had tried to concentrate. "All this?" She'd waved her pen at his body. "This will all heal. You're going to be fine. So what I need you to do is focus on your head, because that sends people back here more often than you want to know." The doctor had let that sink in before she spoke again. People can react badly when they don't know how to react to something. That's true for everyone, but men in particular can very quickly find themselves in places they don't want to be. I'm talking aggression, I'm talking family problems, heavy drinking. She had ticked them off on her fingers. Drugs, sex stuff, prostitutes, violent porn. "And you, Kieran?" He had stared at her.
"Me what?"
"A guy like you, what are you, 18? In a situation like this, you are a prime candidate for that, my friend. Prime." The doctor's tone softened. "That could be you. Easily. So I want you to make sure it isn't. Do not let yourself get sideswiped by this, all right? There's going to be a lot to deal with emotionally, so be prepared. You need some sort of release that's not going to end up with you dead or miserable or in jail. So take me seriously when I say this. Find something positive that helps." The same day he was released from hospital, Kieran had followed Verity into their house, dropped his bag, and walked down the hallway and straight out of the back door. He had stripped down to his shorts, plunged into the sea, and swum and swum and swum. He opened the hall cupboard now to put the broom back, and slowed as he passed the next bedroom along. It had once belonged to his older brother, Finn, but at some point Kieran and his parents had simply started referring to it as the other room. Other room was about right. Since Finn died, Brian and Verity had tried using the space variously as a home office and a gym. They never said it out loud, but Kieran guessed they didn't find it easy to spend time in there because for the last few years, it had become essentially a storage space. It was packed full of belongings they hardly ever needed, which offered the dual benefit of keeping the room both in use and rarely visited. The door was ajar now, though, and Kieran used a finger to push it open. It looked almost as he expected, with the addition of flat-packed cardboard boxes stacked against the walls, but he stopped when he saw that the spare bed nestled amid the clutter had been made up. The sheets had been tucked in without much care. A dirty coffee mug stood next to the bed, along with a book spread open to mark its page and Verity's reading glasses perched on the spine. She must be sleeping there, at least some of the time. Kieran had never in his life known his parents to sleep apart. He looked at the bed now and wondered what to make of that. In the kitchen, he found Verity leaning forward in her seat, balancing a mouthful of cereal on a spoon. She was holding it out at face height, ignoring the milk that slopped over the edge and onto the tiled floor. At the other end of the spoon, Brian Elliott opened his mouth barely wide enough to speak.
"I've had enough."
"You haven't had anything at all yet." Verity glanced up as Kieran entered and pointed him towards the fresh coffee before turning her attention back to her husband. Kieran's parents had used to compete in local triathlons together. 4 years ago, Brian had come second in the over 50 category. Verity placed the edge of the spoon against her husband's lips, coaxing them apart. He opened his mouth like a child. Kieran watched until eventually Verity looked over.
How is the surf and turf?
He shrugged. At the table, his dad refused a second mouthful.
It was fine. Have you seen Mia this morning?
No.
Eat, please, Brian.
She's not here?
She's taken Audrey out.
Kieran checked his phone.
No new messages.
He pulled out a kitchen chair and moved a box so he could sit down. The flap wasn't sealed, and as he looked inside, he stopped. In the box was some of his mother's clothes, folded neatly next to what he could only describe as rotting household rubbish. The cream jumper Verity had knitted herself had a dark spatter across the front, where a used tea bag had bled out against the wool. A browning banana peel was tucked into the pocket of a pair of trousers. Kieran stared at the contents, then held out the box wordlessly. Verity barely glanced at it, shrugging at his silent question.
He knows we're moving.
She turned back to Brian, breakfast bowl still in her hand.
He sees me packing and he wants to help, so he puts in whatever he can find.
She ran an eye over the other boxes.
He's done a few.
This is dreadful. Verity didn't reply. Just scooped up another mouthful of cereal.
Mum?
Yes?
You should have told me. Why didn't you tell me it was like this?
You have enough on. You've got Audrey now. Work.
Verity looked him calmly in the eye.
I can manage your dad. It's fine.
It's not, Mum. This is not fine at all. This is really bad.
I can understand why he might be feeling that way.
And there it was, like clockwork, the active listening that Verity was so keen on.
Kieran ignored it and tried again.
How long have you been sleeping in the other room?
Not long, and only sometimes.
Verity gave up on the cereal and stood to put the bowl in the sink.
He gets a bit restless at night.
They were talking about Brian as though he wasn't there, Kieran realized. He wondered what Verity's current online support group, he thought it was a fairly safe bet that she was part of one, would make of that.
It's not too late to find somewhere in Sydney, Mum, he said, for both of you.
It is, and we've been through this.
I know, but your dad would find an interstate move difficult.
Yeah, but he'd get used to it eventually, and it'd be better for you. You wouldn't have to do this on your own. Mia and I would be around, and Audrey. It could be a new start.
Verity didn't answer, but Kieran thought he could guess what she was thinking.
Verity Elliott did not want a new start. What she wanted was for things to be the way they used to be. She would never say that, though, he knew.
Sure enough, she took a sip of coffee and glanced at the beach towel draped over the back of Kieran's chair.
Are you going for a swim?
Can we not change the subject?
I wasn't trying to.
Verity regarded him across the kitchen.
I was going to ask if you were coping okay.
Oh. Kieran swallowed.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, this whole thing with Dad is...
He tried to find the word.
Confronting?
Verity supplied.
Yeah, I suppose.
Kieran had been going to say really shit, but sure, that was close enough.
It's... Verity started, then hesitated.
Kieran waited, genuinely curious what she was going to say. Here in her kitchen, surrounded by half-filled boxes of rubbish-stained clothes, packed by a man who had stood by her side for 40 years and now looked at her as though he couldn't quite place her. Verity stared into a coffee mug with a hint of a frown on her face. For a long moment, the only sound was the ticking of the kitchen clock coming from a box beside the counter, Then she took a breath. When she looked up, her expression was back to neutral. The thing to remember, Kieran, is that feelings of uncertainty or anxiety are completely normal ahead of big... She broke off as Kieran stood abruptly. No. He had absolutely no interest in sitting through a natural-to-fear change session led by his mother. He'd had to do that one already a few times, in fact, with actual qualified professionals. If you don't want to talk about this, he said, I may as well swim. Verity was firmly serene. I thought we were talking. Did you really? They looked at each other over the boxes. Then Verity opened her mouth. All right. The mask was still perfectly in place. Be careful in the water. Her words were as light as air. Kieran stared at his mother. She gazed back. He genuinely could not tell if she was having a dig. Slowly, he picked up his towel and walked out of the kitchen, making sure not to slam the door in case that meant something.
Where's Finn off to?
Brian's question floated into the hall. Verity didn't bother to correct him. At the back door, Kieran ignored a small patch of sand he'd missed, scattering the grains as he strode out onto the veranda. He looked out at the sea, hoping to find Mia walking barefoot in the shallows or lying on a towel with their daughter. No Mia. No Audrey. The beach behind their house was empty. Kieran took out his phone and sent her another text. Where are you guys? He walked down the thin but well-worn path through the back gate and onto the sand. He stopped when he neared the tide line and turned, shielding his eyes. To the north, the rolling waves fizzed white against the sand. A couple of distant boats drifted with the breeze. To the south, Kieran froze. To the south, just a few minutes' walk away, a small crowd had gathered. They were standing very still and close together, their heads down and dogs held tight on leads as they watched something unfolding at the shoreline. Their distress pulsed across the sand. Kieran would have known what it was, even without the flash of a blue uniform, even without the police tape flapping against makeshift stakes outside what he could now see was Fisherman's Cottage. There was only one thing in Evelyn Bay that drew a crowd like that to the water's edge. Kieran dropped his towel and started to run. Chapter 6. It wasn't them, Kieran knew, his heels sinking into the damp sand as he tried to pick up speed. It wasn't Mia and Audrey at the feet of that crowd. It wasn't them, because someone would have knocked on his parents' door by now. Kieran would not have been allowed to sit exasperated at his mother's kitchen table while this played out a few hundred metres away. It wasn't them, because otherwise the largely forgotten but familiar faces of neighbours that turned towards Kieran as he ran up now would surely be softened with sympathy. It wasn't Mia or Audrey, Kieran told himself as he drew to a halt with his breath burning in his chest, because he simply could not bear it to be them. He was right. The small crowd shifted and parted a little, enough for him to see what it was that had drawn this silent vigil. And it wasn't them. It wasn't Mia lying still, with her hair lank against the damp sand, her bare arms mottled with an unearthly blue-white bloom of cold. It wasn't Mia sprawled lifeless at the shoreline, with the distinctive bright orange glow of her waitress uniform darkened by the sea. It wasn't Mia. It wasn't even Olivia, thank God, as the plastic police tape shuddered and glinted in the breeze, roping off the path leading directly to Fisherman's Cottage. It was Bronte. Kieran's immediate thought was a pure, shameful rush of relief. He ran both hands over his face, horrified that someone might notice. He took a deep breath. Do they know what happened? He said to the woman next to him, whose name he knew he should remember. He could picture her on his parents' porch sipping wine at barbecues. The woman shook her head. her grey hair catching the wind as her dog strained at its leash. "They haven't said. I heard her housemate found her."
"Olivia?"
Kieran could see the roped-off gate leading to Fisherman's Cottage. The woman nodded but said no more, her eyes on the horizon. Kieran's own gaze crept back to Bronte. She was lying on her side, lengthways along the beach with her back to the sea. Her arms were limp and her face was pressed against the sand. The careful highlights in her hair were dull and matted. Her baby doll eyes were closed. Kieran had a sudden flash of her, so different from this. Running through the spray after Audrey's hat, looking out at the sea and laughing in frustration. A single young cop Kieran didn't recognize stood near the water with his boots damp and sandy, guarding the territory between Bronte and the onlookers who had gathered a respectful distance away.
"Shouldn't they get her out?"
someone muttered as the tail end of a heavy wave raced up the sand and threatened to lap at the edge of the girl's orange uniform. The young cop had no idea what he should be doing. Even Kieran could see that. The guy had almost certainly spent the summer dealing with lost wallets and underage drinking. The officer kept glancing desperately towards Fisherman's Cottage and looked relieved as the back door suddenly swung open and a voice shouted out,
"Oi! Bloody go around!"
A second police officer had stepped out onto the porch and was thrusting a finger in the direction of a couple of dog walkers who had broken away from the crowd and were attempting a shortcut along the cordoned-off path. Kieran definitely recognized this cop. He used to be the young nervous one himself. 12 years ago, the man had been Constable Chris Wren, fresh-faced and overeager to please in his first posting. Now, approaching 40 and the town's sergeant, Wren looked neither fresh nor eager. Wren's hair had been thinning prematurely even back then, and his now completely bald head shone with a light sheen of sunscreen. He had always been fit, and Kieran recognized his build as that of a fellow gym-goer, albeit one who probably had to work harder these days than he'd used to. Wren watched until the cowed couple skulked off, their dog straining at the leash. He shook his head once, mouthing something that looked like unbelievable, then disappeared back inside. The door slammed shut, and at the water's edge, the young cop's face fell. Kieran turned back to Fisherman's Cottage. A small window overlooked a sandy garden and rickety, weather-worn fence. The back bedroom, probably, if the layout of this place was anything like his parents'. Bronte's room, then. Her window looked onto the beach, Olivia had said the night before. She thought she heard something out the back of the house a couple of nights. Olivia had said that too. Kieran looked at the window and imagined Bronte staring out at the dark, listening. He glanced at the young cop, then back at the house. They'd hear all that from Olivia, he supposed, and he jumped as his phone beeped in his pocket. He pulled it out to read the message. "Mia." He felt a fresh, giddy rush of relief. "I'm near the surf and turf. Where are you?" Almost immediately, a second message. "Something's happened at the beach." He tapped a reply. "I know I'm here. On my way now. Talk when I get there." The response was quick. "What's going on? Something bad?" Kieran looked back at Bronte. Her feet were bare and she had painted her toenails pink. A strip of seaweed was plastered to her cheek. The edge flapped in a gust of wind and settled slick and brown against her lips. She didn't move. "Yes. Something very bad." Kieran turned and stepped away from the crowd, his legs feeling unreliable. As he crossed the sand, he thought he sensed movement in the house and gave a start. Where the bedroom window had been blank, he could now see a figure, obscured by the reflection of the glass. Kieran took another step and the angle of the light changed, and he could see that it was only Sergeant Wren. The officer was hunched forward, his phone trapped between his shoulder and chin. He was nodding stiffly and appeared to be scribbling something in a notebook. He listened a bit longer,
then ended the call and straightened up. Wren was very still, staring out through the glass across the sand and down to the water. Then, as Kieran watched, he lifted a hand and dragged it slowly over his face. Forget the young cop, Kieran thought. It had been a long time since Chris Wren had had to deal with anything even close to this. Perhaps thinking the same thing, Sergeant Wren stood watching a minute longer. Then he turned abruptly, and the window to Bronte's room was empty again, the glass reflecting only the sky, the sea, and the crest of white water breaking behind a lone dark shape in the sand. Chapter 7. Kieran found Mia waiting outside the surf and turf, with Audrey strapped in the baby sling across her chest. The restaurant doors were locked and the lights were off, but the path outside was getting busy. Small groups clustered, split and reformed as the morning's passers-by were drawn in by the solemn faces and hushed whispers. Kieran edged through the throng and pulled Mia and Audrey into a hug hard enough to make his daughter screech.
"Sorry, little one," he said. "I'm just very glad to see you."
Kieran's hand paused as he stroked her head. She was wearing the yellow floral hat Bronte had fished out of the lost property box. From the way Mia was fiddling with the cotton rim, Kieran could tell she had heard the news. A woman coughed.
"You come from the beach, Kieran?"
Kieran looked over at a middle-aged bottle blonde who had been making faces at Audrey. She was wearing the familiar orange waitress uniform, and Kieran knew without reading the tag on her shirt that her name was Lynn. He couldn't remember a time when she hadn't worked at the surf and turf.
"Yeah, I was just down there. They're saying it's Bronte."
He nodded. Lynn's mouth hardened into a line and she reached into her pocket and pulled out a packet of cigarettes. She took a step away from Audrey as she lit up.
"She was nice," she said.
"Bronte, did you know her well?" Lynn shrugged, her shoulders tight.
"A bit, I suppose. She wasn't like some of them we get, these casuals who forget they're here to work. That wasn't Bronte. Even lately, even though she only had a couple of weeks left on the roster, she still turned up for a shift. Good with the customers too, even the tricky ones, especially the tricky ones sometimes."
Lynn took a short drag, her mouth falling back into its thin line as she exhaled through her nose. She flicked her cigarette ash in the vague direction of the beach.
"It's too bloody dark down there, I'm always saying. It's not safe."
Kieran thought back to the night before, sitting by the water with Mia. The marina lights behind them and stretch of sand ahead disappearing into shadow. How Mia had been reluctant to walk home through the pitch black. And so they hadn't. They had gone a different way instead. He could tell from Mia's face that she was thinking the same thing.
"We've taken it up with the council," Lynn went on, her fingers twitchy. "I've told them that we need some lights along there. Twice I've told them that. It's in the AGM minutes. But some of the residents don't like it, you know, say it would make it hard to sleep. But I told them you've got people coming from all over, the mainland, wherever. They don't know what the water's like. I mean, Bronte was from Canberra. She could probably barely swim."
"They've got pools in Canberra," Mia snapped. And Kieran blinked. That was unusual for her. She was fiddling with Audrey's hat again, taking it off and putting it back on. Lynn regarded her through a veil of cigarette smoke. She nodded towards the ocean, crashing beyond the line of trees.
"That's not pool water."
Kieran shook his head. "I don't think Bronte was swimming anyway," he said, and they both looked at him. "She was wearing her work clothes."
"Oh."
Lynn's whole face tightened as she absorbed that.
"Well, maybe..."
She blinked hard.
"Maybe she..." Kieran could see Lynn trying very hard to think of a good explanation. A good, perfectly plausible reason why a young woman might venture into the sea in her uniform late at night. A reason that would allow them all to avoid acknowledging an alternative that was suddenly hanging thick and dark and heavy in the air between them. None of them gave it life by putting it into words. Thick, dark alternatives like that did not belong in Evelyn Bay. It wasn't fair to say Evelyn Bay was a place where nothing ever happened. Things did, of course. Ask anyone who had been there for the storm. But not often. And not whatever this was. She was a really lovely girl, Lynn said finally. Really kind. She swapped with me last week so I could take my cat to the vet. And once... She stopped as a silver four-wheel drive pulled up, slowing to a crawl near them. The driver clocked the crowd and, ignoring the empty parking space on the street right out the front, put on his indicator and made to turn into the side delivery entrance. Kieran, Mia and Lynn stepped back to allow the car through, the surfboard strapped to its roof juddering as the wheels crunched over the gravel. The car pulled to a stop outside the Surf and Turf's delivery door and the engine cut dead. The driver didn't get out immediately, and Kieran could make out the glow of a mobile phone pressed to his ear. Kieran didn't recognize the car, but he knew the man. Julian Wallace, manager of the Surf and Turf. Kieran had caught sight of him the night before, cutting the music at closing time and instructing a scowling Liam to fetch the mop, and had been struck by the way some people really never changed. Julian still had the same grey buzz cut he'd had as long as Kieran had known him. He had the angular, ropey build of a distance runner, but it was water rather than road that had honed his shape. Julian had run the Nippers Surf Lifesaving Group for kids ever since Kieran himself had been a member, and his voice had the kind of natural authority that still made Kieran feel the urge to jump into line and pay attention. Kieran watched now as the phone screen went dark inside the car. Julian sat behind the wheel for what felt like a long minute before opening the door. When he did step out, he looked shaken. Not much, but it was disturbing to see any show of emotion on Julian's notoriously granite-like features. Sean had once said the only difference between Julian winning the lottery and running over his dog was a tiny upward or downward inflection at the corner of his lips. There was no question which way things were going this morning. The inflection was firmly down. He went to unlock the side door to the restaurant and for the first time noticed Lynn at the edge of the driveway, waiting in her uniform. Lynn, sorry. He shook his head, distracted. I meant to call you. You may as well head home. I'll let you all know what's happening when I know myself, okay?
Okay.
The waitress trapped the very tip of her tongue between her yellowing teeth, and even Kieran could hear the question she was fighting not to ask.
Will we still get paid?
It wasn't unreasonable, Kieran thought, not with the slow season approaching. Julian didn't seem to notice as he turned back to the side door, swearing under his breath as he struggled to get the lock to slide free. He tried again, successfully this time, and disappeared inside only to re-emerge a minute later clutching a large bunch of keys. He slammed the door, got back into his car without another word, and reversed faster than was possibly prudent before driving back the way he'd come.
Does he still own Fisherman's Cottage?
Mia asked.
Yeah, gives Olivia and Bronte, I guess, a staff discount on the rent.
Lynn paused.
So I suppose Chris Wren will be needing to have a word with him.
I saw Sergeant Wren down at the beach, Kieran said, picturing the broad police officer framed in the bedroom window.
He's in charge still?
Lynn nodded and kicked her spent cigarette butt into the sandy ditch.
For now, anyway.
She broke off, and before Kieran could ask what she meant, Lynn had turned her attention to the road, where a dark-haired man was approaching. He was frowning at his mobile phone, typing something furiously with his thumb as he walked.
Oh, God.
Lynn rolled her eyes.
Here's another one who won't be happy. He likes his routine. He'll have to go to the library instead. George!
She raised her voice as the man, still oblivious, climbed the steps to the Surf and Turf's front entrance. He looked up in surprise when the locked door rattled in his hand.
Closed, I'm afraid, George, love.
The man blinked, and Kieran recognised him as the customer with the laptop who Bronte had served the night before. He appeared to have his laptop with him again today, only now it was encased in a battered leather satchel slung across his chest. He had turned up the collar of his light jacket against the sea breeze, and somewhat improbably had an actual print newspaper tucked under his arm. The fact he was no older than early 40s and had the world's news on the phone in the palm of his other hand made the perfectly innocent object look like a nostalgic affectation.
"Why is it shut?" he asked Lynn, peering through the Surf and Turf's darkened windows.
Kieran saw Mia watching him with a faintly puzzled look on her face.
"There's been an accident down at the beach," Lynn said. "Something's happened to Bronte."
The man turned at that.
"Really? Is she okay?"
"No."
Lynn's voice was tight. She lit another cigarette.
"No. Sergeant Wren's down there now."
The man looked at her, then nodded slowly, getting her meaning. He swapped his newspaper to his other arm and pulled out his phone again, tapping with a different intent this time, his expression sober as he scrolled. Kieran watched him, then turned as Mia touched his arm and pointed across the road. Ash, grey-faced and walking so fast that his dog had to trot to keep up with him, had his eyes down and his own phone pressed to his ear. After a silent moment, he dropped his hand and glared at the screen in frustration.
"Ash!"
Kieran called, and Ash stopped. He blinked, as though he'd almost forgotten for a moment that they were back in town, then changed direction and headed over.
"You've heard about Bronte," he was saying before he'd even reached them. "We can't get hold of Liv."
"Wren's over at the cottage," Kieran said. "I didn't see Liv, though. Maybe she's at the station."
"Right."
Ash didn't look much happier with that, and raked a hand across his unshaven jaw.
"I heard Liv found her."
"Found Bronte?" Mia said. "I thought she stayed at her mum's last night."
"Yeah, she did. I dropped her off there myself."
Ash shook his head and checked his phone again. The screen was still blank.
"So, yeah, I don't know."
Ash looked up now and saw that the man on the steps had stopped scrolling and was listening to them.
"Jesus, do you bloody mind, George?"
Ash gave the bloke the blank-eyed stare that typically made most people immediately look away. Not this guy, though, Kieran was interested to note. He held Ash's gaze before shrugging and turning back to his own phone.
"Oh my God, poor Liv," Mia said. "Can you imagine what that would be like for her? Finding her housemate like that, especially after everything with Gabby."
"This is a lot different from Gabby, though," Kieran said. "I mean,
Bronte's body had been right there for one thing." He didn't finish the thought out loud, wished he hadn't started it.
"It's the same beach," Mia said.
That was true, Kieran thought, but it was a big stretch of sand. And it was around this time of year, too.
"It's a tragedy, that's what it is."
Lynn had lit a fresh cigarette and inhaled with force.
"Bronte was a beautiful soul. And that beach is too bloody dark. It's an accident waiting to happen."
She was still clinging to that then, Kieran noted.
"Accident or not,"
the man on the steps cut in. He was reading something on his phone.
"Sounds like someone was seen with her."
"How would you know that?" Ash snapped.
"Evelyn Bay Online Community Hub."
The man regarded Ash.
"You're not a regular on the EBOC forum, then, I take it?"
"No."
Ash actually laughed.
"If I want to know what my nan and her mates think about last week's bin collection, I'll pop down the retirement home and ask them."
"Fair enough. Although, personally..."
The man shrugged, his eyes still on Ash.
"I always find it quite interesting what people care enough to bitch about."
An odd tension that Kieran couldn't even begin to read passed between the two men.
Sorry, mate. He jumped in before Ash could respond. You said someone was seen with Bronte. Does it say who?
The man scanned his screen, then shook his head.
Not yet.
He dropped his phone in his pocket and headed down the steps. But give it 5 minutes.
Ash looked like he was about to say something more when his own phone buzzed. He pulled it out, relief flashing across his face.
Kieran watched his expression change as he read the text message.
Shit, he breathed in as he read it again.
What?
Kieran wanted to ask, but all at once he found himself picturing Bronte, standing knee-deep in the sea, holding out the lost property box, lying very still on the sand. And suddenly, he didn't want to be the one to ask.
Shit,
Ash said again, turning the screen so Kieran could read the message.
From Sean. The person seen with her was Liam.
Chapter 8.
Oh my God.
Lynn broke the silence.
Liam.
She breathed out the name with a haze of smoke as they all looked at the darkened windows of the Surf and Turf, where 12 hours earlier Liam had been flipping burgers while Bronte served tables. Kieran waited for the rush of denial.
The surely not, I can't believe he would ever.
Breathless astonishment. But Lynn's lips stayed wrapped around her cigarette. She took a deep, slow drag. Ash was staring blankly at his phone, his thumb hovering above the screen, while Mia retied Audrey's hat firmly under her chin, fumbling with the straps. Kieran's own thoughts were lurching haphazardly through the night before, through the drinks, the chat, the kind gesture from a casual waitress, before circling back to one specified moment.
You kill someone.
Liam's words had floated from the kitchen hatch.
You deserve all the shit that's coming your way.
Somewhere inside Kieran, deep beneath soft, hoary layers of guilt, a mean worm pulsated and rolled over. He breathed in and out and opened his mouth.
I suppose we should wait until we know more, he said out loud, because he felt someone should.
They knew plenty more soon enough. The whispers and hearsay and heated exclamations were already bouncing from mouth to ear until, in fits and starts, the story seeped out. Kick-out time at the Surf and Turf was set in stone, and the night before had been no exception. At 11 p.m. the music was cut, customers were shown the door, and the mops and scrubbing brushes came out for the 30-minute nightly clean and reset. But it being the end of the summer and Julian Wallace being a reasonable man, the front of house and kitchen staff were one by one given the nod to head off early as they wrapped up their tasks. At 11:13 p.m, Liam Gilroy was recorded on the Main Street CCTV cameras standing on the empty pavement not far from the restaurant's entrance. 2 minutes and 40 seconds later, Bronte Laidler appeared in the frame. She stopped a few paces away from Liam. They appeared to be talking. Liam had pointed to his car, a 5-year-old white Holden. Bronte had nodded. 4 minutes and 6 seconds after he first appeared on camera, Liam climbed behind the wheel, Bronte got into the passenger seat, and they both shut their doors. The car drove out of sight. There were no other cameras to capture what happened next. Shortly before 11:30 p.m., the neighbour who had bought the home to the left of Fisherman's Cottage 38 years earlier for a price that now sounded like pocket change, rose from her couch as the end titles of a James Bond film rolled and moved to the window to pull closed a gap in her curtains. As she tugged the fabric together, she noted a vehicle that didn't belong to any of the nearby homes parked on the street outside. Light in colour was all she could remember. Some 20 minutes later, the same neighbour, teeth brushed and alarm clock set, opened her back door to allow her terrier cross to stretch its legs for a final time. As she waited, she thought she heard faint voices floating from the direction of the beach.
She was unable to commit to either a male or female tone, nor comment on the topic of discussion. They had been talking, she had insisted, nothing more. Not arguing and certainly not fighting. Or, as an active member of the Evelyn Bay Neighbourhood Watch Scheme, she would have recalled her training and summoned the police. Either way, by the time she had called her dog inside and taken herself off to bed, she had forgotten all about it. Until Sergeant Chris Wren had knocked on her door the next morning and asked how well she'd known the young waitress who had been staying in the cottage next door. Ash's phone rang at last. "Finally," he said, his features slackening with relief as Olivia's picture flashed on the screen. He turned his back on the surf and turf and lifted the phone to his ear. "You okay? Where are you?" Ash listened. "Nah, don't." His eyes flicked to the growing crowd. "Look, Sean's at the marina. Go there instead. I'm on my way." He hung up and turned back to Kieran and Mia. "Can you come? Sean didn't sound great, and I'm not sure what Liv will need." Kieran glanced at Mia, who was trying to soothe the fractious Audrey. "She needs feeding," she said. "You go, but tell Liv I'll call her. I'll find somewhere to sit and get this feed done and..." Mia hesitated as both she and Kieran looked down the road that led home. Past Fisherman's Cottage, past the police tape. Past whatever had happened to Bronte on the shoreline. Kieran shifted, uneasy. "You okay to walk back alone?" Was he okay with it? "Yeah," Mia shrugged. "I mean, yes. You know, it's broad daylight. There are lots of people about. The police are probably all still over there." "I suppose." "Yeah," she frowned. "So I think it's fine, right?" They looked at each other, trying to work out exactly where the line fell between cautious and overdramatic. "I'll walk with you," Lynn said suddenly. She finished her latest cigarette and ground it out. "I'm going that way anyway." "Really?" Mia said. "You happy to do that?" "No worries at all." She meant it too, Kieran thought. That was interesting. Lynn, who had barely said a word since Liam's name was first mentioned, was really not worried at all. Ash was already moving. "Let's get going," he said to Kieran. "Liv's waiting." They headed out of town, each lost in his own thoughts. As they passed the police station, Kieran saw the few parking spots out the front and on the road were all now taken up by both patrol and unmarked vehicles. Reinforcements from Hobart, he guessed. "Hey, is Ren getting the boot or something?" Kieran asked, remembering what Lynn had started to say earlier. "Old station's getting the boot," Ash said. "Budget cuts. Think the plan is to send a couple of cops over from Port Osborne in summer, but there'll be no one full-time over winter. I heard Ren was pretty pissed off about it. He could have gone to Port Osborne, but decided to quit instead." "What, altogether?" "Well, when the station closes next month. He's moving to the mainland, going to work for his brother's haulage business." "Well, that'll be different." "Yeah, I mean, I get it. He wasn't the only one annoyed about the station closing. My mum's on the neighbourhood watch and they petitioned and stuff, but it was a done deal. You know what it's like, though. It's only Ren and whatever sidekicks they send him for the summer. Probably costs more to keep the lights on than it's worth." Ash thought for a moment as the marina came into view up ahead, the water gleaming in the late morning light. "Although after last night, who knows?" The marina was close to deserted, with some of the boats already prepared for off-season storage, tarps strewn like shrouds across their decks. Kieran spotted the Nautilus blue immediately. Sean was standing by the helm, his arms crossed as he stared far out to sea. Sean's had been a close family even before the storm, Kieran knew. But afterwards, 7-year-old Liam had reacted to the death of his dad by clinging hard to his uncle. Sean, barely 18 himself at the time and reeling hard, had clung back. It was interesting that Liam had been seen on camera with Bronte, though, Kieran thought. At the very least,
It added a new edge to Julian's caginess earlier, when the man had stopped by the surf and turf. Julian's gentle courtship with Liam's mother, Sarah, in the years following the storm had been one of the few positive things to emerge in the aftermath. And the will-they-won't-they green shoots of romance had kept the entire town enchanted over a long winter. They had, at last, in a much-celebrated happy ending. And 3 years after losing his dad, Liam gained a stepfather. From what Kieran knew, Julian had embraced stepfatherhood with the same earnest dedication with which he approached any new challenge, and perhaps against the odds, he had won Liam over. It probably helped. Kieran pictured Julian hunched tense in his car outside the surf and turf earlier, that Julian genuinely seemed to give a shit about his stepson. Sean was the first to spot Kieran and Ash approaching, and he said something to Olivia. She'd been sitting on the dock very still, her face down. Her head snapped up and she started to stand, but Ash was already there, taking 3 large strides across the dock straight to her. She turned wordlessly and buried her face in his shoulder. From the heave of her back, Kieran could tell she was crying hard. Ash put his arms around her and waited. "What's happening with Liam?" Kieran said quietly to Sean as he climbed aboard. "He's at the station with Sarah. Julian's got a lawyer coming from Hobart." Kieran waited for him to say something more, but Sean turned back to the water, his eyes unseeing. On the dock, Ash murmured something to Olivia, who gave a muffled reply. "Are you doing okay?" Kieran asked Sean. "Yeah, I don't know." He rubbed a hand over his face. "God, this is all so wrong. What are they saying in town?" "Nothing important." "Yeah, right." Sean turned back to the water. "I can guess." Kieran looked over at Olivia, who was wiping her face with a tissue. Ash was rubbing her back. She'd forgotten her yoga mat, Ash said to Kieran quietly. And Olivia looked up. "That's how you found Bronte," Kieran said to her, and she nodded. "Mum hadn't slept well, so we were going to the early class. They usually run out of mats, though, so we stopped by my place on the way. Mum waited outside in the car." "Oh, my God." Olivia put her hands to her eyes. "Can you imagine if Mum had come with me and seen her?" She looked ill at the thought. "I was only going to run in and out, but Bronte's bedroom door was open, which was a bit weird because it was still early, and I couldn't hear her in the house, so..." She stopped. The only sounds were the water lapping against the boats and the distant call of gulls. "I could tell from the back door handle that it was unlocked, so I went outside to see if she was having a coffee or something." Olivia stared at the shredded tissue. "I saw her lying near the water. She was still in her work clothes. She must have been out there on her own all night." A silence followed. "Liv." Sean's voice was quiet, his eyes still on the waves. "Did Wren say what they thought had happened?" "No." Olivia shook her head. "But at the station I overheard one of the cops from Hobart say they thought Bronte had been out on the beach for at least 5 or 6 hours, so I think that's why..." Olivia glanced at Sean, who didn't look back. "Why they wanted to talk to Liam." "Right." A shadow crossed Sean's face. "Did they ask about anything else, or was it just Liam?" "Other things. They wanted to know if Bronte had a boyfriend. I told them about that guy she was seeing earlier in the summer." She looked at Ash. "You know, that tourist, Marco something. I couldn't remember his last name." "The Spanish bloke who was really loud in bed." Ash shook his head. "I wouldn't even have remembered his first name. I've managed to block him out." The way Ash said it made Kieran think he remembered the guy quite well. "He was Portuguese, not Spanish,"
Olivia looked down. Probably doesn't matter. He's been gone for weeks anyway. Is there a chance that bloke had anything to do with Bronte hearing noises at night? Kieran said. Maybe him coming around to visit her, bother her? Sean looked over at that, as Olivia frowned and shook her head. I think he'd left before that started. The cops were very interested in why Bronte hadn't reported it, though, or me. I mean, God. She rubbed her eyes. I said, I obviously wish we had. Ash frowned. You didn't do anything wrong, Liv. Didn't I? A gust of wind blew through the marina, and the empty masts whistled and swayed. If I'd been there... Ash shook his head sharply. No. If you'd been there last night, who knows what might have happened? Maybe nothing would have happened. Yeah, or maybe it would. They all fell quiet. Kieran could hear the dock creak as the boats rocked and resettled. Beyond the trees, the red brick of the police station was visible. Do you always stay with your mum on Saturday nights? He asked. Lately I have been. If I'm not working, we'll watch a movie or something. Go to yoga in the morning. So people might know that was a regular thing, Kieran said, that Bronte would be alone in the house. Olivia went very still. Yeah, I suppose some people might. People do know that, Liv. Sean's voice was caught by the wind. He didn't look over as he spoke. Most people who know you know that. Olivia stared at him, her face tense. Then she blinked hard. Oh my God, I wish I'd... Stop. Ash's voice was firm. Stop that now. Olivia fell silent, but Kieran could guess what she was thinking. The road not travelled. He had had enough of those thoughts himself, and they never led anywhere good. Ash is right, he said, and Olivia looked up. I know you know that, Liv, but it's true. I mean, Mia and I sat on the beach for 20 minutes last night. If we'd walked back along the sand instead of... Kieran stopped, remembering the walk home. Dark and still, and then all of a sudden, not. What? Sean said. We saw a car last night, driving way too fast, not far from Fisherman's Cottage. What kind of car? Sean asked. But Kieran could hear the real question loud and clear. Was it Liam's 5-year-old white Holden? Kieran didn't know what the right answer was. I'm not sure, he said, truthfully. Sean frowned. He didn't know what the right answer was either, Kieran thought. You should tell Sergeant Wren about that. Ash's voice was oddly light and Sean's eyes flicked over. He stared at his friend, trying to gauge his tone. Ash pretended not to notice. Kieran looked from one to the other. He couldn't read Ash either, which was a little unusual. Yeah, he said. I will. Sean turned back to the horizon, his head tilted in the way Kieran knew meant he was thinking. At last, he opened his mouth. Listen, guys, about Liam. He was cut off as Olivia's phone rang. They waited as she answered, listening and occasionally nodding at the voice on the other end. Okay, thank you. She frowned as she hung up. That was Chris Wren. He needs me back at the house. Ash looked at her. What for? I don't know. He sounded... Olivia shook her head. I'm not sure. I'd better go. Hang on, Sean said as she got to her feet. About Liam. He waited until they were all facing him. Liam wouldn't do this. Okay? He wouldn't. Olivia stood hand in hand with Ash, neither quite meeting Sean's eye. The already strange atmosphere had taken a sharp, awkward turn. Sean looked to Kieran. You heard Liam and Bronte talking together last night, right? Not arguing or shouting. Did Liam say anything at all that sounded like a red flag? He waited until Kieran shook his head. So if Ren or someone asks, Sean said, can you tell them that? Kieran hesitated.
I suppose I can tell them what I heard, but mate, I didn't really.
But you did hear them. I mean, if Liam had been acting weird or aggressively or whatever, you'd have noticed, right? But you didn't. You said yourself last night that it was fine. So all I'm asking is that you tell the police that. Mate? Please? The wind sent the boats rocking and creaking again as Kieran looked at his friend and made himself picture Liam. Not the Liam of last night, sullen with his grease-stained apron and the mop in his hand, but Liam of 12 years ago. Still a little boy then, dressed in a black shirt that had been bought especially for the occasion. Liam's tears had run under his chin and soaked into the stiff collar as he was handed flowers to place on his dad's coffin. Kieran? Sean was pleading now. If the police ask? Kieran was trying hard to think of Liam, but his mind instead kept circling back to Sean. Not Sean at the funeral, though. A few days before that, standing in Kieran's living room, both of them 18 and face-to-face for the first time after the storm. It was an accident, Kieran had started to say. Somewhere in the family house that now felt too big were Verity and Brian, both so odd and strained now, even in silence. Kieran had made himself try again. He'd forced himself to speak, knowing there weren't enough words in the world to fix this. Hating it. Hating himself. Sean had stopped him. I know, mate, it's okay. The relief had been blinding. Kieran looked at Sean now. His friend was still waiting. Listen, if the police ask... Kieran heard the deck groan as Ash shifted his weight, but he ignored it. Ash knew how things were. Whatever his problem was, he'd get over it. If the police ask, yeah, I can tell them that. Thank you. Sean's face cracked a little. Thanks, mate. It probably won't be enough to get him out of the shit, but it might help. Kieran doubted it would even do that. No worries. And look, I know Liam can be a bit... Sean stopped and gave a helpless shrug. But I appreciate you doing this for him. I know, mate, it's okay. It wasn't Liam he was doing it for, but Kieran didn't bother to correct him. Chapter 9. Kieran thought Ash and Olivia might want to walk alone to Fisherman's Cottage, but when he hung back to give him the chance, Ash waited for him. You're going this way, aren't you? Kieran nodded. Mia had texted to say she had got back to his parents' house safely. While he hadn't truly expected any different, he still felt relieved. They left Sean pulling on his wetsuit. You going out to the wreck? Kieran asked in surprise. And Sean shrugged, his face grim. I can't see any of this putting off the Norwegians. I'm fine, seriously, he said when he saw Kieran glance at the oxygen tanks. Check them over yourself if it makes you feel better. Kieran had followed Ash and Olivia out of the marina and onto the road. No one suggested going the beach way. So, Liam, Ash said as soon as they hit the tarmac. Sand blew across the road, crunching underfoot. Behind them, Sean and the Nautilus Blue were well out of sight, but still, Ash kept his voice low. The thing about Liam... Ash stopped again, choosing his words. Look, I get it. He's Sean's nephew. They're close. But don't get sucked into saying anything about him that you don't want to. I'm not planning to, mate, Kieran said. Why? Something I should know about him? No, Ash said quickly, shaking his head. I'm not saying that. I mean, I think Liam's a bit of an arsehole. That's not news, but let's be real. We were all around when the storm hit. We all know the bloody background playing out here.
So, yeah, Sean's probably entitled to ask for a favour and, yeah, maybe he deserves to get it.
They rounded the corner, and up ahead, Kieran could see the first glimpse of Fisherman's Cottage. Two police cars were parked on the road outside.
But whatever happened back then is done, Ash said. That's not going to change. So don't let it tangle you up in something you're not happy with now.
A tiny pause.
Either of you, eh?
Kieran couldn't help it. He shot a sideways glance at Olivia. She didn't react, but then she always had been better at controlling herself than he had. It had been a very long morning. He could think of 50 good reasons off the top of his head for the tension across Olivia's shoulders and neck. He didn't know her well enough now to be able to tell what she was thinking, but that hadn't always been the case. And Kieran suddenly found himself wondering, for the first time in years, how much his good friend Ash actually knew about that day of the storm. It had been a big summer. With their final year exams done and dusted, Kieran and Sean had launched themselves headfirst into the booze-soaked celebrations. Good weather had brought a lot of tourists through that year, including plenty of bored teenage girls who could think of a few places they'd rather be than on holiday in Tasmania with their parents. Kieran considered it his personal civic duty to show these girls a good time, and whenever the beach or caravan park or someone's rented house came alive with music playing and beer flowing, Kieran was generally there, watching the sun both set and rise through bleary eyes. Ash had been right there beside him, of course, despite having already called it quits at school. When the students at Evelyn Bay Secondary School finished Year 10, the state's education system meant anyone who wanted to complete high school had to dig out their bus pass and spend their final 2 years travelling to and from the nearest college. Ash, who had coasted effortlessly in the top third of class for his first 10 academic years, had gone to visit his dad and returned with the view that trailing 90 minutes each way on a school bus was for bloody idiots with nothing better to do. He couldn't be talked around, and with that, Ash's formal education had come to an end. It was great, though, Ash had used to say, a lot, over those next 2 years. He'd showed up on the first morning to wave Kieran and Sean off on the bus with a grin. Then he'd turned around and got a job at the plant nursery, working out pretty quickly that he was pretty good at it, and started finding his own gardening work. He had money coming in. Not loads, but more than Kieran and Sean. The best bit, though, Ash reckoned, was the freedom. Being able to spend his days however he chose. Maybe so, Kieran had thought. But it still seemed that most days what Ash chose to do was hang around the bus stop in the evenings, waiting for his friends to come home from school. For Kieran, the summer of the storm had felt almost like a reunion, with the classroom finally behind them. They'd all been working. Ash had cooked up some idea to launch his own landscaping business and was flat out turning his grandmother's garden into a showpiece. Kieran and Sean had worked for their older brothers, same as every year. Finn and Toby didn't muck around when it came to the diving business, and it was hard work. Minimum wage for maximum shit, Kieran had used to complain to Verity, but he hadn't really meant it. Olivia had been there too, down at the beach in her bathers, getting a beer from the fridge at a Friday night house party, looking as relieved as anyone to have put the tedious bus rides to college behind her. She'd been around a lot, but not with them. Because while Kieran and Ash had a strong preference for the holiday happy girls who stayed at Seaview Cabins or the caravan park before disappearing back to the mainland 2 weeks later, Olivia and her friends had a strong preference for guys who were nothing like Kieran and Ash. She had time for Sean, though. Kieran would sometimes glance up from whatever sagging couch he'd landed on, trying to remember the name of the girl he was talking to, and across the party he'd see Olivia and Sean leaning against the kitchen counter, chatting quietly about something Kieran could only guess at. Kieran would look over at Ash, who would also be watching and shaking his head with the same baffled look.
"I don't get it," Ash had said more than once. "Is she just really into his whole shy virgin thing or what?"
Kieran had grinned into his drink.
I don't know, mate. I mean, look at him, and then look at her.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Then explain to me what's going on.
Kieran laughed.
I can't.
That wasn't true, though. When Kieran thought about it, which he found himself doing surprisingly often, the answer was pretty obvious. Olivia and Sean were friends. They had taken a couple of the same classes during the final school year and had been paired together on a joint project. This had once involved Sean spending a whole afternoon working from Olivia's bedroom, about which he was infuriatingly light on detail, despite an extended grilling from Ash.
That's it, Ash had said, putting his bottle down on a sticky countertop a few weeks later and a few drinks deeper than he should have been. I'm going to rescue her.
And he had tried, marching across the party and throwing a heavy arm around Sean before cutting him off mid-sentence. Olivia, to the surprise of no one but Ash himself, had blanked him until he'd been forced to slink away, red-faced, and spend the rest of the night muttering furiously into his beer.
You and Olivia are nice and tight, mate. You're officially one of the girls now,
Ash had said casually the next day, wiping the tiny hint of triumph off Sean's face. Sean had looked to Kieran, who had checked his phone and pretended not to notice, partly because, for reasons he couldn't quite articulate, he found the whole situation a little irritating himself. After that, Sean had mostly gone back to standing alone at parties, and everyone was happy. The police cars parked outside Fisherman's Cottage were empty, Kieran could see now as they drew closer. Caution tape had been strung between the gateposts, barring entry, and a uniformed officer Kieran didn't recognise stood watch outside. Other than that, he could see no activity at the front of the property. Whatever was happening, it was going on within the house or down on the beach, Kieran guessed. Do you think I'll have to go back inside? Olivia slowed as they got nearer to the cottage.
I don't know, Ash said.
Maybe. They slowed with her, eventually coming to a complete stop a short distance from her home.
Liv, hey.
Ash turned to face her, his voice soft.
It's okay, yeah? It'll be okay.
When Olivia didn't make any sign that she agreed, Ash reached out and took her hand. The next time Kieran had seen Olivia properly was a few weeks later as summer was slipping away. Kieran, for once, hadn't minded too much when the heat began to dip and the tourists thinned out. His exam results had come in and were acceptable, if not overly impressive, and in a matter of weeks he'd been heading to Sydney, where there was a uni place with his name on it. It had been a warm, lazy day when Kieran had found himself climbing the cliff path to the lookout. At the top, he'd stood on the edge, peering over. Below, he could see the strip of deserted sandy beach leading to the caves. The path down was not formally marked, but it may as well have been. The worn ground showed the way as clearly as any sign. The surface of the sea was calm above the Mary Minerva, as Kieran picked his way down. On the edge of a rocky outcrop that was almost always underwater, the sculptural memorial to the wreck glinted in the sun, facing out towards the site. The sea itself was empty, though. It was too early in the season for wreck diving, and even if it hadn't been, Kieran knew his brother wouldn't be out on the boat that day. Finn and Toby's request